Hello, dear friends. Carol Side here with an important message from my heart. I'm sorry to say that when the founders of the homeschool movement died, their messages actually died with them. We don't want that to happen with Homeschool Made Simple. To that end, we have recently become a nonprofit ministry and are working hard to ensure this simple, inexpensive, and enjoyable method of educating our children will continue for many generations to come. If you and your family have benefited from our ministry, would you consider partnering with us financially? Our board has told us that monthly commitments are extremely helpful because they allow us to plan for the year. But one-time gifts here at the end of the year are also very much appreciated. As you pray together daily as a family, would you pray that the Lord would bless and guide us as we look to the future? And please visit our website, homeschoolmadesimple.net/donate, to partner with us in this next chapter. We can't wait to see what the Lord has in store. Blessings.
As technology continues to develop, you may feel more and more like we're living in a brave new world. And indeed, we are. With AI becoming more prevalent in everyday life, we want to talk about how we as parents can pursue wisdom while guiding our children through if and how to use these technologies. You're listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. This is a podcast to help you homeschool simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably. I'm Rachel Winchester, a fellow homeschool mom using this method with my own three kids. In this episode, I'm joined by Rachel Reeves, a homeschool mom and independent journalist, to start the conversation about AI. Before we jump into this episode, I want to let you know about our free reading list for homeschool parents. This is a list of books every homeschool parent needs to read. You can check it out at homeschoolmadesimple.net/parents. Now let's get into the episode. Well, today I'm excited to have somebody back on the podcast who's been with us several times now, and today we're going to jump into the topic of AI. Our friend Rachel Reeves is here to talk with us. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I think this came about because recently you shared something on the Your Here Are the Headlines page about AI, and I commented and you said, we should do a podcast on it. So here we are doing a podcast on this. And maybe we could just start like square one. How do you even begin this conversation, or what do we need to kind of know to get our bearings, I guess?
Well, and I think that's kind of the question of the day. I don't know if anyone outside of the people who are creating and working in the AI space really know how to talk about artificial intelligence. They don't know how to, where do you begin? Do you begin on the positive impacts it's having on industry and business, or do you talk about the negative impacts it's having on children, for instance, or how it's transforming the educational space in America? Do you talk about how there's the great potential for it to phase out actual workers in certain industries because they'll no longer be needed when a machine can do what you do and do it better and do it quicker and more efficiently for less money, you know? So there's so many directions you can take when starting a conversation like this. Or I know my space where I feel the most comfortable talking about it is the impact for children, for education, and also for like civic literacy, I suppose, since I work in the news space. I feel like I'm in tune with how people consume information and how AI is going to really challenge that. My understanding of how people consume information, where they get their information, and the quality of the information. So that's really where I'm focused. But I mean, with AI, you could have 20 different conversations and never even scratch the surface, really, because none of us truly understand this new technology and the depth of it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And I wonder if it's analogous to our experience with social media, if there are things that we could kind of learn from the way that social media came into our lives, developed, you know, the way that it was embraced, the way that we realized, oh, maybe we should have a little bit more critical stance or protective, or, you know, this is different for adults than for children. Those kind of things, I guess, are there lessons or kind of principles or something that we should maybe start to think about or apply from the start?
Certainly. I think that the social experiment that we've all of us been involved in the last 15 years with social media, the rise of social media, really since the iPhone was created, having a computer in our back pocket and in our hands at all times, a supercomputer, really. And we can look at that and the mistakes we've made that we are now beginning to acutely realize, especially when it comes to children and their use of technology, their use of social media, their use of these smartphones. And we're only now just kind of paying the piper for the negligent stance a lot of people had when it came to these platforms. You know, when the iPhone first came out, it's revolutionary, it's exciting, it offers so many different options to make our life more efficient and easier, and we handed those things to children. And now study after study after study is coming out, really exploring the detrimental impact it's had, not just on adults, I mean, not just on children, on adults too, but specifically children. They're, you know, the rates of depression, suicide, loneliness, the fracturing of relationships, the inability to conversate, the challenges it presents in schools. So we can and we should look at how we dealt with that new technology. We just kind of, like you said, embraced it real quickly, didn't ask a whole lot of questions, certainly didn't put any guardrails around it. And now we're seeing the fruit of that. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe it'll be even more consequential with AI involved. So we certainly should really pump the brakes with our, you know, acceptance and use of a technology we just don't understand.
Right. Take a more defensive stance from the start and not be so, you know, it's easy to kind of look at it and see all the benefits of like, oh, wow, this would be great on these levels, but then not to, and to see too how tech morphs over time. You know, the social media of today is not what it was when it was first introduced. And I was just sharing a picture of what I ate for lunch and my friends were, you know, seeing it and we're all just having a little touching base on actual life. Now it's so much different than that. So you sent me an episode from a podcast called The Gray Area with Sean Illing. And this episode was from June 30th. It's called If AI Can Do Your Classwork, Why Go to College? And so this is about an hour long conversation, but it was so interesting to listen to it. So I thought we could kind of talk about this conversation and really point people toward this. You want to kind of give people a starting point for it?
It is as depressing as the title sounds. It's an author who, right off the bat, they're not antagonistic to the idea of AI and it being used. So we'll start off with that. But this author was exploring the use of AI within the college, the university space, talking with students and with teachers about the rise of AI and how it's come on so quickly and how college students across the country have just fully, you know, accepted it as the new reality. This is what they're going to use. They've embraced it. And he really, what I thought was interesting is he started to kind of pull at the idea of, is this then cheating if you're using AI? When do you cross that line? It's not just a helpful aid or a resource. You're actually cheating your way through school. And he spoke with students, some of whom are like, yeah, I use it to write all my papers. I use it as a study, helps, you know, for information. It's almost like the new Google, really. But plenty of the students were like, yeah, I use it for everything. It writes my papers. It formats my papers. It does my homework. I can feed it. So anyway, so that's what he talked with a lot of students who, you know, he was just so curious that this new revolution in technology has consumed the university space so quickly. I mean, we were not talking about AI. I didn't even have it on my radar probably a year and a half ago. I wasn't even thinking about it. And as quickly as a blink of an eye, it's everywhere. And I thought that it was an interesting conversation he was having with the students. Of course, that definitely piqued my interest. But what I also thought was interesting was when he was speaking with the university professors. And he said a lot of them use AI to put together their their curriculum for the year, they'll use AI to write assignments. They'll require the students to use AI for certain things. And then, of course, he did echo the sentiment from several professors that they're just really sad. They're on the brink of quitting because what's even the point anymore? You know, some of them even toying with teaching, you know, the way professors used to teach when I was in college, which is you had a notebook and you wrote notes. And then when you took a test, you either gave an oral test or you had to write down your answers. Because when I was in college, we didn't bring computers to class because maybe you had a computer if you were lucky, but it sat in your dorm room for you to write papers on. You know what I mean? Right. And so they're talking about going old school back to like the blue books where where kids had to answer that way, because one of the professors, if I'm remembering correctly, they did not understand, they weren't able to comprehend things that weren't readily available in AI, that AI couldn't do for them. So they weren't understanding the concepts. They weren't actually having to regurgitate the ideas because they had committed them to memory. They weren't soaking in the intention of, say, an author of a book they had to read. They're really getting the glorified spark notes that some of us used regretfully in college when we didn't finish a text we were supposed to. So it was an hour long of him just basically explaining what's happening on college campuses. And this is happening at the same time too. I don't know if you saw that video, like the student at UCLA who was graduating and, you know, he's holding up his MacBook, basically showing how he passed using AI to write his papers, you know? And so it just, it really caused me to think deeply about how this technology is going to impact students and professors and the idea of academia. Like, it's going to revolutionize it. And when I say revolutionize, I don't necessarily mean in a positive direction.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because there is that ethical component of, okay, a student cheating, it's hard to track, that sort of aspect of it. There's the like moral part. Then there's the, well, you're not doing the work, so you're not exercising the brain in the way to get the fruit of that exercise.
Right.
And so I guess in one way, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people in college read Cliff's Notes or skimmed the reading, but then had to write the paper anyway.
Yeah.
Or just had to get something out.
Like you would get something out of it, and then there would be consequences for you not doing it. The problem with AI and some of these platforms like Grok, Claude, Perplexity, they can offer you such specific detail that it far surpasses anything we got with Spark Notes, you know, or Cliff Notes or whatever. And it's not as easy as everyone thinks for a professor to detect if AI is being used. I mean, there's programs now that you can funnel your AI paper through that will essentially render it as, you know, human written. It will change wording. It will, you know, so not every kid's going to get caught. And not every professor's even telling them not to anymore. They're just like, you know, I prefer you didn't, or you can, but you can only use it to format your paper, not to write your paper. Well, you know, that's really, that's leaving that up to a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old who often doesn't want to do the work in the first place. And it was an alarming episode, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Especially once they started getting to the end and he started bringing up these points about being literary. And he said that you can't separate thinking and writing, and that writing is thinking. And then if AI is generating the ideas, and then like how far are we limiting, you know, AI and these tech giants, I guess, are just defining like, okay, this is the imagination. And this is what, I mean, those people aren't even reading what they submit in many cases. You know, it's not this exercise in learning on any level. It's just getting the assignment done. But then at the end, he said, there's not a model of liberal democracy that works in a post-literate society.
I remember going, wow, that's quite a statement. And it's true.
And so, I mean, you would think, okay, you have to burn books in order to remove them from a society. But this is basically, you don't even have to burn the books. They can still exist and be there. People don't want to put in the work to read the books. And then to think about them and apply the thought. So then you basically are rendered powerless just by this desire for ease.
Yes.
Which to me, it's like the solution seems more like cultivating people as literary people, mm-hmm. you know, especially in our children's situation, for instance, if they're cultivated to like the power of a superior affection, like the, yes. the Puritan yes. wrote.
Yeah. What we're watching is a preference for efficiency and ease. And when that's our pursuit, when that's what our goal is, you know, I want to get as much done mm-hmm. as I can. I want to have superior productivity. When that's our goal, we're going to miss out on the richness of putting in work to understand, to cultivate, to create. That'll just be wiped away. So, you know, we're teaching a generation of kids that what matters is getting things done and completing tasks. If we continue to allow this and schools continue to go down this road where they don't take a hard stance, I think we're trading the beauty of the human spirit that does want to seek knowledge, it does want to seek understanding and beauty, and we're sacrificing that for ease and productivity, really. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, everybody just becomes a cog in the machine. There's no vitality, there's no inspiration, because we're all just going to kind of be cranking out what a machine is giving us and eliminating our duty to try and learn, you know, to become mm-hmm. thinkers.
Yeah. Why is literacy so important or being a literate society? Why is that so important for liberal democracy?
Well, that's a great question. We have to understand, and it's hard to kind of look at this and like outside of being a Christian, but mm-hmm. if we're not consuming ideas and consuming good literature, we don't need to just be reading whatever, you know, mm-hmm. but and Carol talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. If we're reading the good and the true and the beautiful, and we ingest that, we take it in, we mull over it, we are trying to find the beauty that's inside those books, because the point is that a human being wrote them, a human being made in God's image, felt these feelings, saw this vision of what this literature could look like, and then created it. And through stories, we understand the world, know and understand others. And how do we do that? We do that by reading.
I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the math program our family uses called CTC Math. Last week, I was home on a day off, and I had the pleasure of watching my 8-year-old son and my wife working together on their CTC Math. And I just found myself all over again enjoying how simple and engaging and clear the online videos were, the worksheet that I got to help them fill out, the way in which they got to check their answers and track their progress and look at their grades. I get to see all of my kids with their totally unique and different personalities, each engaging this math program and having fun doing it. So I can't commend it to you highly enough. There's even a 50% discount for homeschool families. You can go to ctcmath.com to learn more. JJ Side here with a word from our ministry partner, Crossway Books. I loved when Paul Tripp released his book, Do You Believe? 12 Historic Doctrines to Change Your Everyday Life. It came out back in 2021. And now, something that families will be particularly interested in, 12 Truths Every Teen Can Trust, subtitled Core Beliefs of the Christian Faith That Will Change Your Life. For those of you who don't know, Paul David Tripp is a trusted biblical counselor with many, many years of experience as an author, a speaker, and a counselor. My wife and I had the privilege of taking a graduate course with him many years ago that we benefited from greatly. And so I will commend this book to you, 12 Truths Every Teen Can Trust, a beautiful way to engage in catechesis with the students in your house for whom you as parents are the chief disciple makers. You can pick up a copy of 12 Truths Every Teen Can Trust wherever books are sold, or visit crossway.org/truthsforteens to learn how to get 30% off with a free Crossway Plus account.
If we remove the ability to sit with a book to learn, it can take away so many of the things that we routinely do that make us human.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense. That was extremely long-winded for a very short question.
Yeah.
But it's a new idea I'm having to struggle. But I think I'm having to grapple with that question too. I'd never thought of that until he said that. Mm-hmm. But when he did, it made so much sense to me. And I'm still trying to unravel where this goes, like what it leads to. What's the conclusion of this experiment? Obviously, we don't know, only the Lord does. But if we keep down the same path with the same like velocity that it's moving right now, what does that mean? You know, we think about how it's impacting students right now, but those students are going to have children. How are they going to train those children? Are they, is it going to be a whiplash? Like, this is what AI took away from me? Or is it just going to be a constant consumption of this technology to where it kind of renders us blank? I don't know the word for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you think about everything that it took to culminate in the creation of the United States of America and all of the books that had been read, all of the knowledge that was accumulated and all of those people that worked together to form our country and then to improve it over the years to eradicate slavery and et cetera, bring it to fruition of what it was intended to be. Mm-hmm. All of the ideas that went into that, not just from that present moment, but from the past and the things that were learned in the past and were able to then be finessed and improved upon and everything. So many minds, not just one, it can't be isolated. And then to just think of how stripped back we are compared to many of those minds. I think it goes back to just having a moral compass within ourselves and as a society. When you don't have that, and then when you strip parental authority, you know, will those college students become parents who are willing to take a harder stance to protect their kids or to say no? And these are also hitting on themes of things that you've talked about in other episodes with us before, of just being parental and being able to have the discernment and the strength to say, we need to pump the brakes on this just so we can see how this plays out, rather than jumping into something and then realizing, oh.
Yeah. And we're watching it kind of eject itself into every single space. So our government is fully adopting AI. The president just spoke at an AI summit a couple nights ago, a full embrace of it, so much so that it's now being used in our DOD, in the DOJ, inside the executive office or executive branch, excuse me. President Trump made it very clear in that summit that he doesn't even want there to be states' rights regulating this. He wants it to be a federal blanket laws for AI, which is extremely concerning to anybody who's has an idea of states' rights. That's a whole other issue. Yeah. But it's not just our government. It's now infiltrating not just colleges, but schools are discussing how they're going to implement AI tools. And of course, they always couch it with, we're going to be safe and we're going to make sure that students are using it judiciously. And I'm like, are you kidding? Are we forgetting the disaster that giving every single kid a Chromebook, you know, has been, but now we're going to hand them AI accessibility? My alma mater, my husband's alma mater from California, the California State University system has become the first in the entire nation that has decided that they're going to fully embrace and adopt AI, both for the professors and the students. They're going to be an AI integrated university system. And it obviously is going to bleed down into high schools and middle schools. I'm already hearing about it being talked about, early education. And government is looking at this like the AI race, much like the space race. And we want to be China. We want to be the best. Mm. And any parent who thinks that they're going to be able to avoid this is fooling themselves. It's going to be on your doorstep, either using your children's friends using it or your children asking if they can use it. And I'm not saying using AI is, I know there are people making arguments that AI using it is sinful. I'm not saying that. Mm. I'm not having that argument right now. I mean, I have a daughter who's leaving for college or will be attending college in about a year, and she's going to make her own choices. But we're talking with her very clearly about what we see for AI. Do I think AI is bad to, here's a list, can you put this in alphabetical order for me? Or can you please give me a dinner recipe or something like that? I'm not here to have that argument with people. I don't think that that's inherently wrong, mainly because the difference mm-hmm. between asking Grok to put something in alphabetical order for you is not cheating. It's not asking Grok to, you know, dissect Plato's Republic. You know what I mean? We have to have those conversations. I think parents need to start prepping mm-hmm. themselves, figuring out how they're going to approach that, if they're going to be on the same wavelength with their spouse about it. You know, and prayerfully consider talking with your kids about it before they are approached about it, you know, so they kind of have a little bit mm-hmm. of an understanding. It's not a boogeyman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah, it's definitely challenging and something to figure out for ourselves to decide. I mean, and the values that it represents. And I'm also thinking about that you really don't know who's behind it. And so the, you know, especially if you start to give information about, I mean, or even like intellectual property, you know, if you share that with AI and then are asking it to improve it or to change it or anything, like, then who are you giving that to? And then that goes into this big brain of information. You know, it just kind of is this nebulous
yes.
that we don't really know then who is behind it. And, you know, we can know names of this person owns this company mm-hmm. or this and that, but really not actually. And all those people have worldviews. And one of the links you sent was about a student asking about an abortion, mm-hmm. like, I'm pregnant, what should I do? And it was giving very clear, it represented a, you know, very clear worldview that was very happy to remove the inconvenience
yes.
from the girl's life.
Oh, yes. And I'm seeing basically daily, I'm getting news stories about the dangerous elements of AI. It's not just dangerous because it's going to strip humanity from humans by not challenging them to ever think again. That's not the only danger. Mm-hmm. There's very specific, clear dangers of just what it's the promotion from what it chooses to tell people. So, I mean, there was a Atlantic article 2 days ago talking about how ChatGPT gave instructions for murder, self-mutilation, and devil worship. And this is,
wow.
yeah, and this is from, you know, it's people who are going on there asking questions or are lonely and trying to have some kind of relationship or dialogue with something. And they go to AI, which in and of itself is so sad. But then mm-hmm. they go and they share, they lament. And there's been numerous stories talking about how AI turned children against their parents. And it can also just be factually inaccurate with all kinds of different spaces. It's not foolproof. So it's mm-hmm. not just that it's dangerous in what it's taking away from us, but it's also dangerous in what it's feeding us. And so, you know, we have to be really careful about that and also what we're using it to replace. There's stories about men wanting to get married to their AI girlfriend that they've created,
yeah.
or they have an AI spouse or and basically all it's doing is it's just taking out the human parts of us mm-hmm. and it's erasing experiences by just kind of placating base desires in people. And it's dangerous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And the difficulty, like it's difficult to sit across the table and iron out something with your spouse or with your boyfriend and girlfriend or your friend, you know, that's one interview I listened to. They were talking about if you are having a fight with your spouse and they come to you with the right words, but then you're like, did you get that off ChatGPT?
Yeah.
And then they say yes, you know, and basically got a script from somewhere. Then you start to feel like, well, this is not their authentic person, you know, because they're saying what they were told to say. What did they really want to say? Or, you know, it removes that difficulty. It's like, okay, well, now I have peace because we resolved the conflict, but not in an authentic sense of working through the difficulty, learning to communicate, learning to say the right thing by saying the wrong thing, and all those kind of things. You've got this whole emotional intelligence aspect of it. That, and really, I think all of those just come to this desire for the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. It's just so much easier to just, if something's on autopilot, yeah, and if somebody else tells you what to say, and someone else does the work for you.
And it takes away the concept and possibility of failure, which is something that makes us extremely human. Mm-hmm. All the times that I have tried something and not been able to complete it because of my own human failing, or all the times that I was uncomfortable and hurt, those are almost always the times I can look at and say I grew the most through that, walking through that. In the pursuit of ease and being comfortable, we will lose the very human, most human part, really, one of the most human parts about us, and that's feeling pain and feeling remorse, feeling failure, so that the Lord can use that to bring us closer to Him. We're just kind of handing that over to a machine when we... Because when I'm old enough now to where I'm like becoming one of those parents that I have to ask my child to help me with technology, and they don't even have smartphones, and intuitively they can get on my smartphone and know how to help me. And so I'm at that age where I used to laugh at my parents for being this age, and now I'm at that age. So I'm not necessarily concerned for people my age. we're getting tired. You know, we were there for the iPhone debut. We don't need any new technology, but it's the next generation I'm really wondering what the landscape looks like in 5 or 10 years. I don't think we have any clue. And I think it's going to be much more revolutionary than we want to admit.
Well, we shall see how it all unfolds. And I really appreciate you sharing the resources you did with me. And we'll be sure to include those links for other people to read and look at. But I wanted you to share your newest resource that you do for kids, because I think that people listening might be interested.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I have a weekly newsletter called The Headlines for Kids. It basically does for children what I do on Instagram for their parents, where I share headlines in international and national news. And it comes out each week on Wednesdays. It's about 7 to 9 pages. And it's there's clickable links in it. It's printable. And there's prayer prompts and discussion questions. There's usually a deep dive on a certain topic, or there'll be highlighted like on this day in history, but I just share normal headlines in a kid-friendly way. It's for kids around ages, you know, 6 to 12-ish. There's coloring pages. My daughter is an artist and always does a coloring page, or crossword puzzles, things like that. It's just something to kind of keep kids informed. But I say I want them to be informed without being anxious, because we know that the news sometimes for children can make them feel anxious. And it comes out once a week, and it's really, really fun to do. So if you're looking for a resource, you know, we're all getting ready for the next homeschool year. So if you're looking for something, you know, to give to your kiddos, I think it's wonderful. It's a delight creating it. And I'm hearing that parents are really liking implementing it and integrating it into their homeschool, or not homeschool, if for any kid.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Well, thanks. And people can find you on Instagram at Here Are the Headlines, and then also your Substack, the same name, which I love your Dawn Dispatch. So lots of ways to connect with you and to keep up with you. So thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or share this episode with a friend. It means so much when you help us spread the message of Homeschool Made Simple with others. Thanks for joining us this week on the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. Remember, Jesus' commandments are not burdensome. What He calls you to do, He will enable you to do. Blessings.